Hi and welcome everyone. Welcome to our new live session. So my name is Anthony. I'm Customer Chief Engineer at ETAS and I'm going to be your moderator today. So last week we had already a webinar live session regarding cybersecurity where we introduced our checklist and recommendations in order to help you to get, you know, into cybersecurity into your company, into your organizations, having also a look on how to improve security for your products and for your systems. And the live session of today will be also related to cybersecurity, but in that case, with more concrete cases, we will go through different attacks which happened the last years. And we will try to see how can we solve these attacks in combination with AutoSAR products. So today, I'm the moderator. I have two experts with me, which are Michael and George.
Yeah, hi. My name is Michael Schneider. I'm working at ETAS as Lead Technical Officer for AutoSAR Security. I have more than 8 years of experience in automotive security, and I'm also participating actively in the AutoSAR Consortium in the Working Group Security, where I'm also filling the role of Speaker of the Working Group Security. In addition to that, my tasks include supporting our customers in securing their products, being this ECUs, vehicles, applications, you name it.
And I'm George Bray. I'm the product manager for RTOS and RTHVR, which are our classic AutoSAR operating system and hypervisor solutions. I've been with ETAS since 2018, and I've been working with AutoSAR initially as an engineer, then as an FAE, and now in the product management side since 2020.
Thanks, guys. So basically, we will have a first, you know, introduction session of around 30 minutes, 40 minutes, and then we will have a Q&A session where we'll have the possibility to answer to your questions. So basically in the Teams chat, you have a Q&A box where you can drop your questions. And at the end of the first session, then of 30, 40 minutes, as mentioned, we will have a look on this and answer your question, which are in the chat. So I would say, let's start. And Michael, I give you the lead, stage is yours.
Thank you, Anthony. I would like to start with a brief introduction into automotive security. When you look at modern vehicles, they are quite complex products. They consist of lots of software that, again, consists of millions of lines of code, implementing numerous features that oftentimes implement interfaces to the external world. And this actually enables attackers to leverage attacks that they already know from the IT world and apply them to the vehicles. Some of them are shown here, like command injection, data corruption, man-in-the-middle attacks, password attacks, eavesdropping, and so on. And they also do this, right? This is also, from their perspective, a worthwhile task because vehicles are valuable assets and it makes sense to attack them because when you steal them, you can sell them. They are worth quite the money. If you want to enable a feature that you should pay money for, but you don't want to pay money for, that's also a reasonable attacker motivation. So people are doing this. And just to underline this, I've also compiled a set of publications that you can find out there, right? Journal articles, publications, press releases, research articles. This just shows how active this scene is by security researchers, for instance, that are looking at vehicles, trying to find vulnerabilities, document them very in great detail, but also by reports about criminals that are exploiting these vulnerabilities to steal vehicles, for instance, right? We can see here one article where some new form of keyless car theft worked in just under 2 minutes. I would also like to highlight here that that's a challenge of the whole industry. We have Tesla here as one example, but in the articles that I've shown before. You could have also seen Mercedes and BMW logos. So it's a challenge of the industry. It's, every OEM has basically security challenges to solve. However, thankfully, also the good guys are making some progress. Some years ago, legislation was passed that mandates vehicle manufacturers to take security serious, which means that they need to present proof that they have implemented sufficient needs to secure the vehicle in order to get vehicle type approval, which means to be able to sell the vehicle actually. The UNECE R155 covers quite a number of countries like Europe, Japan, and others. China also have their own regulations. These are the GBs. Other countries, however, are more relying on cybersecurity guidelines, like the United States, for instance. They are relying on the NHTSA cybersecurity best practices. I would like to highlight one more regulation here that's still upcoming, which is the European Union Cybersecurity Resilience Act, the CRA. This was passed only recently and covers all sorts of products, including also all vehicles that were out of scope of the UNR 155, right? So this is our vehicles like two-wheelers, agricultural machines, off-road vehicles, and the like. So if your company does produce this kind of vehicle, you should definitely have a look at the CRA, because this will be applicable to you in the near future and also force you to take security seriously. So what I've shown you so far is basically the introduction to virtually every automotive security presentation, right? Presenting the regulations, presenting articles on attacks, just showing, yeah, okay, security is important. But in my opinion, this lacks tangibility. So it's quite distant from the real world, and I would like to take another approach now and make these the risks here more tangible. And I would like to present you, as Anthony already said at the beginning, real attacks, and explain to you how that works. And we would like to explore with you together how you can mitigate them. So let's start with the first attack, which is the Toyota headlight attack. This is an attack on the 2021 Toyota RAV4, and it works like this. You take the bumper, pull it away a little bit, and you access the cable that's attached to the headlight behind that. Then you take this JBL box, which in fact is not a JBL speaker box, but it's a device which you can buy on the black market in a darknet. So it's modified, and it's in fact a hacking device. It's a CAN injection device. So you take that, you plug it into, you plug the CAN bus wire into the JBL box, you press the play button, you wait some minutes, and then quite magically, doors unlock, engine turns on, lights turn on, and you can sit into the car and drive away. And this whole action takes actually less than 2 minutes. In fact, there's a YouTube video down that's also down here. You can just Google it or look up the very nice write-up of this by Ken Tyndall that shows a video of a surveillance camera where criminals are actually using this attack. And it's, from their point of view, it's very impressive. It's very quick, it takes less than 2 minutes, and they just drive away and nobody notices it. Now, Anthony, I have a question for you. Mm-hmm. You are in this call also as the viewer of our customer. Now, I would like you to put your OEM goggles on, and I would like to have your opinion on this attack. Like, what's your opinion as an OEM? How concerned are you by this?
Well, I would say pretty concerned, actually, because of course, when such a kind of thing is happening to you, it's, you know, making also very bad advertisement for you, and it's damaging your reputation. I just take maybe another example on top of this Toyota case. One who came to my mind was the one from the US, where we had a so-called TikTok challenge, where the strategy was to hack a car, to open the car, and plug your mobile phone to the steering column with a USB cable. And with the software, you were able to start the cars. The case is called so from the Kia boys, and this TikTok challenge was targeting so some Kia and Hyundai cars, and some teenagers, yeah, were stealing cars like this. And as you can imagine, it was a huge damage to Kia and Hyundai on the US market. And of course, this is also such a kind of of reputation damage that you don't want to have. So that's why, yeah, pretty concerned.
Yeah, I remember that one. That was also big, and I would agree that I think they suffered quite reputational damage. And I think actually you could also imagine it with this, right? You can just buy this device on the black market. Not sure how expensive it is though, but if a TikTok challenge would come up and explain how to buy this device and steal Toyotas, could also happen here.
Yeah, indeed.
Okay. Let maybe get back to the story and try to explain how this attack actually works. So how does this attack work? Connected to the CAN bus where we pulled out the wire is a smart key receiver ECU that receives the signal from your smart key fob to unlock the vehicle. And what this JBL device does is it impersonates the smart key receiver ECU and sends the message key validated unlock immobilizer on the CAN bus to the immobilizer ECU, and the immobilizer ECU accepts this message and yeah, unlocks the vehicle. But why does this attack work? Well, basically the main thing is that the critical message is not authenticated, right? So key validated unlock immobilizer is critical because it unlocks your vehicle, and it was just not secured at all, which means that it takes only very little effort to impersonate the smart key receiver as done by the JBL device. And now, Anthony, second question to you. This time, maybe not from the OEM perspective, but more like market perspective, because you also know what our customers are requesting, what technologies the market uses, and so on. So maybe, and because I also know that you have some security background, maybe you can tell me or tell us, like, what do you see as technologies that the market would could use to mitigate this attack?
Well, basically, there is a lot. As you know, cybersecurity is a very good thing, but nothing is secure, at least at 100%. It's always a matter of time and matter of money to hack a system. So, I think we don't need to lie to ourselves here. However, of course, we have some different possibilities basically to secure your ECUs and secure your system. And based on the use case now you described, I think one which is pretty used and common at the moment and which is pretty easy to implement would be SecOC, secure onboard communication. And I think with such a kind of methodology, you would be able to protect your ECU in a way which is not so complicated, which will not cost you too much money, and which is already yeah, recognized on the market as a very good security measure.
Sounds like a good idea to me, but maybe George, what's your opinion on this?
Absolutely. So when we look at this one, this is a problem we can solve with software, and in this case, AUTOSAR could potentially help. So AUTOSAR itself, it's a specification for building automotive software that's been in development since 2003. It's a specification you've likely heard of and may already be familiar with, as it's been widely accepted and used in the automotive industry. In the case of security here, as Anthony and Michael alluded to, AutoStar does contain several building blocks that could have been used to protect against this particular attack, and the key one here, as Anthony mentioned, is secure onboard communication. Secure onboard communication, or SecOC, is an AutoStar module that aims to prove authenticity and integrity of protocol data units, or PDUs, transmitted in the system. For our purposes here, a PDU in AutoStar is a protocol-independent payload. In a moment, I'll also mention an IPDU, which is an interaction layer protocol data unit, and for our purposes, it describes anything, any PDU above the PDUR in the diagram to the right. In this case, SecOC would have prevented the impersonation of an ECU and its CAN messages inside of the system. It works in conjunction with the Crypto Service Module, or CSM, and does rely on several other system services to do its job. Generally, in order to do its job, a message authentication code, or MAC, is used to fulfill the aforementioned authenticity and integrity needs, as you can see with the diagram on the left. So let's have a quick look at how the secured IPDU on the left is constructed. To secure the IPDU, first a header is added that describes, amongst other things, the method of authentication. Then a freshness value is calculated and appended to protect against replay attacks. The value itself is either a monotonic counter or a timestamp. And then finally, the MAC is generated and appended to the IPDU, and the algorithm used to generate the MAC is described by the SecOC profile or configured manually by the integrator. Specifically by default, SecOC profiles 1 and 2 use the NIST standard approach to CMAC generation with AS128 as the crypto algorithm, and profile 3 uses CMAC and AS128 but adds some stipulations to use the JASPAR method of secure communication to be compatible. Within an AutoStar software stack, as on the right, the PDU router, or PDUR, is used to transfer PDUs between modules by use of a routing table. In the case of a simple CAN message, like in our Toyota RAV4 scenario, the PDUR may be connecting the CANIF and COM modules. In order to provide the authenticity and integrity checks on a CAN message that would have protected against this attack, the PDUR could instead route the IPDU from the CANIF to SecOC, then from SecOC back to COM. The key point here is that the processing of the secure header and the MAC is done seamlessly. So whilst the routing of the IPDU is now different, the upper COM module doesn't need to be aware that the underlying CAN message has additional data appended to it, or that this data has been checked. It's the sole responsibility of the PDUR to route to the SecOC when transmitting and to notify SecOC when receiving a secured IPDU. But the real question here is, does SecOC really do the trick?
Yes, that's indeed the correct question. Because, I mean, just now you could think, well, we had a risk, we mitigated that, so job done, right? But is that really the case? Because we have now one security control, and what would be the case if you could attack this security control and be successful with that, so that your control is no longer effective? And in fact, you can do that, and this is the second attack that I would like to show you today. This is again on the same vehicle as before. It's again in a 2021 Toyota RAV4, which is, however, pure coincidence, right? So I don't want to blame Toyota here that they are not doing their homework. I think we have seen in the beginning that the whole industries has security as a challenge. It just happens to be that these two attacks are from the same vehicle. Anyways, how does this attack work? This is what I would like to show you here is a research paper, and the security researchers, they managed to extract the SecOC keys of an ECU by first of all applying voltage glitching to get the ECU's firmware dumped. Then once they had it offline, they could analyze it, so they reverse engineered it to understand how the firmware is actually working on the inside. And they found some flaws within the firmware, especially in the UDS Secure Access handler, that allowed them to execute their own Ethica code. And with this, they were then in the end able to execute their own code that could extract the SecOC keys that are stored on the ECU. So with that, they broke SecOC, because once you know the secret key, you can impersonate the ECU again by an external device, and the attack from the beginning worked again. So Anthony, same game as before. Please put again your OEM goggles on and tell me, looking at this, how concerned does this make you? It breaks SecOC after all.
Well, yeah, maybe my answer is going to be a little bit surprising. So of course, it's not a good thing when someone arrives to break, you know, security measures and an ECU. On the other side here, you know, we are talking about an academical way of implementing SecOC. And there is, of course, some concept. If you implement SecOC correctly, then you should not really have such a kind of issues. So that's why here, concerned, yes, but I would have maybe more look on how it did happen. Because once SecOC pretty well implemented, then you should not have such a kind of issues.
Well, on the one hand, yes, when it's well implemented, yes, but I would like to challenge this, it's just academical view on this, because, so, I think what you're trying to say is that they took high initial, so that what they're doing takes high effort, right? So when you just see it, reverse engineering it, finding flaws, and so on, and that just takes a ton of time, and yes, you're right, it takes a ton of time, but only the first time. Once you have found your way through the ECU, understood how it works, then repeating it is easy. So what I want to say is that once you understood how the ECU works, you can take this JBL device that we've seen before, upgrade it to version 2, now with SecOC hacking included, and then the attack still works. And doesn't maybe take 2 minutes, but 5 minutes, but still, quick enough to just steal your car. So I think you should also be concerned by this academical papers, because again, initial effort might be high, but repeatability is oftentimes way lower. But again, maybe some more insights into why was this attack actually successful. And it was successful because the keys were stored directly within the firmware image and on the host flash, and in plain text. So the researchers could find them basically directly in plain text and could extract them without too many obstacles. So then Anthony, again, same question as before. from market side, like, again, talking about mitigations, what do you see as mitigations that are oftentimes requested within the market?
Yeah, basically, if we take into consideration what you mentioned and the fact that the keys were not protected in a very good way. The first thing which come to my mind when we are talking about such a kind of application would be to use the HSM, so a hardware security module. And I think the trend of the market is simply to put your keys directly into the HSM in order to secure it and avoid, for example, such a kind of use case that you mentioned.
Sounds, as before, I would say that this sounds also a good idea to me. But then again, I would like to ask George, do you think also that's a good idea?
Yeah, absolutely. So as you mentioned there, Anthony, the HSM really, when coupled with the SecOC, can make the difference. So we need to mitigate the shortcomings of software alone. And in order to mitigate the shortcomings of software alone, we can add a hardware component to the architecture. Specifically, again, we're talking about a hardware security module or HSM. At a high level, the HSM is providing certificate management, storage of keys for features such as secure diagnostics and secure data storage. In this case, as Michael and Anthony alluded to, the secure storage of keys would have prevented the attack. However, to utilize a HSM, software on the application cores and the HSM cores needs to be integrated together. The HSM cores themselves are isolated in a hardware enclave with only a limited and controlled mechanism for communication. This is the bridge on the diagram to the right. Therefore, the software on the application cores on the left of that diagram must know how to communicate with the particular HSM software stack that's loaded. As the two are separate, dumping the application core firmware on the left would not reveal the secrets stored inside the HSM on the right. Usually, the HSM software provides a HSM driver to integrate into the AUTOSAR stack on the application cores, and this translates the AUTOSAR crypto APIs into proprietary HSM function calls that are then sent over the bridge to the HSM enclave. An HSM software stack, such as SAKA-HSM in this case, really provides a trust anchor to the ECU that fulfills the cryptographic needs of the system. It takes advantage of specific hardware accelerators for cryptographic algorithms and other hardware peripherals for functionality such as true random number generation and the secure storage. The HSM also provides a lot more functionality than that which we've shown today relevant to the two attacks. It can really provide an invaluable part of any system concept. So we've got secure boot to ensure that only valid software is started by the ECU. We've got secure operation to perform runtime manipulation detection to catch issues after boot. Secure access, protecting diagnostic channels to validate data coming in and out of the ECU. Secure software update, when coupled with something like a flash bootloader, to ensure that only authentic software can be programmed onto the ECU. Secure communication, proving authenticity and integrity of data received by the ECU, as we've shown today. And secure production, providing secure data storage that we've also alluded to.
Yeah, I think thank you, George. The HSM already does a quite good job on addressing lots of security controls that we would like to have in an ECU, but I think it also has its limits. And you need to consider more than just SecOC and an HSM when you think about holistically secured ECUs. And I would just like to highlight one broad use case here with two features that I think can address this use case. And the use case is security after SOP. So once your vehicle is on the road, you would also like to for it to stay secure and stay secure about the lifetime of the vehicle, which could be decades, right? In order to achieve this, you should have a good idea on what's going on your vehicle. You should have an intrusion detection system in place that monitors ECU resources, for instance, communication resources, and raises security events in case the system monitors something suspicious. These events are then transmitted to the VSOC, the Vehicle Security Operations Center. This is an entity that contains security experts sitting in the back office that get these events, that analyze these events, and that propose countermeasures. And then, based on these proposals, the OEM can decide how to re react to such an attack. And one possible reaction could be a software update over the air. So assume that the attack was possible because there was a vulnerability in your software that allowed an attacker to intrude into the ECU, and you want to close this vulnerability, this bug, and you want to do this for your whole fleet worldwide. in order to do this, you need to have some campaign program, of course, that distributes the images to your vehicles. But on the ECU itself, you also need a piece of software, which is called Flash Bootloader, that takes the image, verifies the signature to make sure that it really comes from the OEM. And performs the update safely of the ECU, which means that if the update fails, the ECU falls back to a safe state, and the ECU keeps operational. There you go.
For sure. So I'll continue for a second where Michael left off there. So as you say, these two features bring more to the whole system that the HSM and SecOC don't have on their own. If we look on then to wrap up what we said to build a secure ECU overall, there are several phases to be considered and several things that we'd recommend in each of those phases, depending on where you currently are. So in the design phase, we would certainly highlight that please do analyze the different security needs of the ECU that you're building. Don't underestimate the usage of something like a TARA, a threat and risk assessment, to really dig deep into this ECU situation. Then defining the security controls for that ECU to continue into the implementation phase. Additionally, don't overlook hardware security. As we've shown here, software is only part of the solution. Something like a HSM might come into requirements for the hardware itself. They might have a bearing on the hardware to be chosen. Do select a solution that fulfills all the needs there and meets both the security concept and the hardware security. Next, on the implementation phase, please do feel free to leverage things like AUTOSAR. It provides a lot of existing security building blocks that can help with not reinventing the wheel. Using off-the-shelf and proven components can also help with the security concept. And even more than that, there are lots of experts on AUTOSAR out there, including ourselves. Do feel free to get support to help you define the correct configurations there. It is a very big, complex system. If you're finding that the expertise in the team isn't there as well, this is something we can assist with, because we would certainly recommend that you have not only AUTOSAR experts, but security experts looking at these angles. And then finally, we always come back to testing and implementation phase. Basic things like code reviews are known quantities now, but going further than that with penetration testing and tool-supported testing such as fuzzing can really help build a bigger, securer picture. And then finally, using some of the features that Michael mentioned a moment ago, such as IDSM and IDSR, continue to monitor the vehicle, detect attacks on the ECU, and proactively push out updates to them. This could either be detecting attacks and responding over the air, like we've described, or at the bare minimum, using the IDSM to gather information that can be offloaded at workshops, then analyzed offline. Functionalities such as firmware over the air, whilst it might feel that they expose another hole to the ECU, the benefits really do outweigh the costs in terms of, okay, we now have to consider that the firmware can be deployed to the ECU, and things like the Flash Bootloader really do need to be secure in validating the ECU software it's received. However, the benefit of being able to respond quickly and actively to attacks that have been detected really helps build a bigger picture. Then I'll hand back to Anthony.
Thanks, George. Thanks, Michael, for this very interesting exchange and presentation. We had some very nice and interesting topic to address. I would like to thank you all, you behind your screens, and also Michael and George for this very interesting meeting. In case you have any questions or interests to exchange with our experts, to exchange with me, please feel free to contact us. We will be very pleased to answer your questions after this webinar. And if you are happy with those webinars and want to get more about ETAS, we have also here an overview of the upcoming webinar coming on October 29th on fuzzing. If you want to continue on the cybersecurity aspect, then if you are interested in simulations and validation and calibration, then I invite you to come for our next one on November 6th. For testing, new session for November 26th. And on the 10th, we will have an expert talk where we will discuss about software development for your ECUs. So thanks a lot for having been with us today and having asked your question. We hope you liked it. And really happy to welcome you in one of those next webinar if you are interested in. Thanks and cheers.